And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 722. I have a special guest joining me today to talk about some second and third year players, the fun exercise that we did last year about this time of year to kind of get you going as draft season is in full bore, as this guest and I have been drafting since August, technically. We got a lot of fun there. But first off, you can find him over at rotowire.com as the lead prospect analyst. He's a senior editor, and he does the weekly Wednesday podcast, as well as some other ones from time to time. You can find him on Twitter at RealJRAnderson. James Anderson, how you doing, my friend?
Doing great, Bubba. Always love talking baseball with you, and it's that time of year, so good to be on.
Yep. Good to switch roles. I joined you a couple weeks ago. That was a blast, and now we can do it this way. And before we get going, I know you've just dropped another top 400 and some other stuff over there. Let everybody know what you got going at RotoWire, because I always say I've been a member there since I was in college. So I support what you guys are doing over there.
That's awesome to hear, Bubba. We've loved the support you've given us throughout the years, and yeah, it's a great time to sign up for your baseball subscriptions. Do have the big top 400. Prospect rankings update that is fresh on the site, and working on the full update to the dynasty rankings as well. And then all of your first year player draft stuff for your dynasty leagues is fully updated there. So a great time to sign up for RotoWire.
Yep. Definitely a great deal. Go do the free trials or whatever you want to do. It's draft season, so take advantage of it all, and you'll probably stick around. So I'm going to say when things are all said and done. All right, let's get into it. I'm going to go down ADP. I'm using ADP from January 1st on DCs for those listening, if you're trying to keep track at home. And I was telling James before the show, like, I'm not going to go, like, we're not talking Ellie De La Cruz or Gunnar Henderson or Jackson Churio. And we can fly through these first two because we probably don't need to go too deep in them. But, you know, you got Jackson Merrill right now. Jackson Merrill's got an ADP of 25. So in a 15, he's in the middle of the second round. We saw an amazing year that kept the Padres in the postseason hunt because of Jackson Merrill. A 2020 type guy, but my question to you is, what do you think a ceiling is for him? Because if we're drafting him at 25, there are other 2020 type players later on, so we're expecting more, I think, from Jackson Merrill. What do you expect from him?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I haven't taken him in the middle of the second round yet myself. You know, last year was an amazing rookie season. I did not see that coming at all. He was always one of those guys where it was easy to kind of project a big power in his future, but it just kind of clicked overnight for him, where he went from being, you know, a really good pure hitter with average power in games to just, you know, he took a jump last year as a 21-year-old. But I mean, 292 average last year. I don't think we should expect him to do that again. He's a really good hitter. Like, I think he's going to be a guy that for his career has a really good average, but probably a little south of 292. And honestly, projecting more than 16 steals seems like a stretch for me too. That might end up being a career high in steals for Jackson Merrill at 16 in 156 games. So I think that's going to be tough for him to really fully repeat last season and build off it. He might be able to build slightly on the power. I could see him hitting 26, 27 homers this year after hitting 24 last year. But I haven't been going with Merrill there. And I look at a player like Michael Harris, who goes in the middle of the third round, where Merrill's going in the middle of the second round. And I think Harris, I would honestly take him straight up over Merrill this year.
And I'm glad you went there, because that's been one of the kind of comparisons when you're looking at ADP of like your Merrills, your Jaren Duran's, who we're not talking about either, your Michael Harris, and they kind of feel like a similar projection profile, if that makes sense. But it's kind of like, where do you want to go? And I like the optimism with the Jackson Merrill, but similar to you, I don't have any shares yet. I haven't gotten there. But Michael Harris is another one I always have a tough time going to. Like, Ryan loves him, who I did shows with on Bubba and the Bloom. So hearing you say that, that's an interesting comparison to try to differentiate the two. And I had no shares of Merrill last year, so I didn't get to enjoy any of that.
Yeah, me neither. Props everyone that got him last year.
I had absolutely no of those. All right, Wyatt Langford. Now, this is one that I've been planting a flag, kind of. I've been trying to get him. I have high expectations for him. I might be overdoing it, so I want to hear your thoughts for someone like Langford. Was one that was hyped going into last year. We obviously know the slow start, the injury, but the second half, 11 homers, 11 steals in the second half. That was great to see. ADP's around 45 right now. Where are you standing on a guy like Wyatt Langford?
Yeah, I love Langford. Loved him really since he got drafted, and was banging the table for him last year. Not after the ADP really shot up there. I wasn't drafting him, you know, in the sixth round or anything like that. But yeah, I think he's just sky's the limit. I mean, I think he could be a guy who's getting drafted sort of in that 10, 11, 12 range for a good 5-6 year run. I think the ADP is kind of misleading on him. I think if you look at the average auction dollar values, that's kind of more where the market is. I think the ADP was, it started out where you could get Langford in the 40s, 50s, I think even 60s, maybe in some early drafts. And so the ADP, I think, is a little misleading because now if you go into a draft, there's people that want Langford, you know, maybe in the third round, maybe they're banking on getting him in the fourth round, but someone else is going to come in and take him in the third round. And then I think when we get into like late March main event season, I think Langford will just be kind of going in the 30s, maybe even in the 20s and in some main events. So the market is moving up on him. I love the player. I hope that I can afford him in some auctions. I hope that it makes sense to take him in some snake drafts. But it's just, you know, he has moved up into a range where he has to be, you know, your third most expensive player, your fourth most expensive player, which I think is fine. But, you know, I don't expect him to return first round value this year just yet.
So we are kind of on the same page with him because I keep saying 45 is like, that's not going to be existent. That seems great. Enjoy it now while you can type thing. I laugh about in our too early DC, the meatball one. He went in the 10th round to Steve Weimer, ADP of 151 in that draft. Like, what were you thinking in that one? But at that time, he was still kind of in the midst of scuffling. So I think we have a little bit of, you know, okay there. But yeah, I'm with you. I said this is a guy that we could see as a first rounder. Like him and Jackson Churio, I have a lot of feelings that are similar on. Mm-hmm. And Churio's got the ADP where Langford doesn't right now. And that's where it's kind of interesting to me. So I'm trying to. I did an OC on Monday night. I almost pushed Langford into round three. I really wanted to, but someone else jumped me on him. So I guess that kind of goes to what you're saying is he is going to be moving up, especially as March comes along. Another player now, if you just look at projections, James Wood and Wyatt Langford have almost identical projections. So that is very interesting. James Wood, I've admitted, is kind of like just a hole for me in trying to figure who he is. Because he just shot through the minors last year, got the call, and ended up producing pretty well. 9 homers, 14 steals at 264. ADP's 54 for Wood, so he's going about 9-10 picks after Langford right now. Where do you sit on a James Wood? Because like I said, the projections are the same as Langford, but I'm lost on what to do with him.
Yeah, I think Wood is, he's just not quite that caliber of young outfielder to me as a Wyatt Langford. I think the biggest gap is just as like a pure hitter. I think Wyatt Langford's a guy that could be, you know, 285 hitter, maybe 290, maybe even have some years where he's pushing 300. And then I think Wood is much more 250, 255, 265 as in like the good years, like last year at a 365 BABIP, 264. I think he'll have some gains, you know, cutting the strikeouts a little, but I don't see that same sort of high level pure hitter with Wood that I do with Langford. And Wood really, he's benefiting because of the Nationals and the way that they like to run. I think on other teams, Wood would maybe struggle to steal more than a dozen bases or so. He's not that sort of that type of player where I would naturally expect him to be a 20 steal guy. But with the Nationals, and we're going to talk about Dylan Cruz in a bit, but you have to factor in the National the Nationals part there with the stolen bases with Wood, and that'll allow him to push for 20 steals. But, you know, it could be 20-20 with like a 255 average, maybe 25 homers, 20 steals, 260 average is kind of like a ceiling with Wood. So, I mean, he belongs to be going in the top 100, top 75, certainly, but the least appealing of the guys we've talked about so far for me for 2025.
So basically the way I'm hearing you, like the projection line, and not how you're describing him, but that number 250, 260, 2020, he's basically what we've always wanted Randy Rosarena to be. That's like who he was. Like, so that'd be like a comp I would make just based on your description. Yeah. So for those trying to, and that's about pick 75, 80 most years. So that makes sense of what you're talking about. So he belongs in the top 100. And yeah, this is a tough one for me. I like this young Nats lineup. I think there's a lot of fantasy potential in this lineup. Like you said, we'll talk Cruz. They have CJ Abrams, who, if he figured out his issues, which I'm going to say he did, will be good there. But lots of questions, obviously, to follow. All right, let's head to the mound real quick here with Yoshinobu Yamamoto. It was kind of a derailed season due to injuries, obviously. Didn't get a big run, 90 innings, though. Looked really dominant, especially in the postseason. So now you're hoping for a big year. They have lots of options in LA. If anybody's been sleeping under a rock right now, ADP is around 56 for Yamamoto. Are you willing to pay that price for a guy that still we haven't seen go full bore in the bigs yet?
I'm not in on the current ADP with Yamamoto just from an inning standpoint. I think he's an SP1 kind of from a skill standpoint. I feel pretty good about that. A low end SP1 maybe. But you know, I think they're going to be very careful with these guys. And there is just the recent injury on his track record. I think he's more like the good version of himself from last year, from like before the injury. And then once he kind of rounded into form later in the year, but I just, you know, I'd probably take the under on the 159 innings Steamer has for him. So it's just not the type of pitcher I want to take there.
Nope. That's a, good to know, because yeah, I haven't touched him yet in drafts, not there at all. Lawrence Butler, amazing second half of the season, which ended up giving him 22 homers, 18 steals, hit 262. Saw some improvements throughout the minors that kind of gave a little bit of hope, and he just ran with it. Now, again, he's only 24, which is really, I think some people, we've talked Lawrence Butler, it feels like for a few years, so he feels like he's an older prospect, but he really isn't. 24 years old, but you have to pay the premium. He's a 68th overall right now in January. Are you paying that price tag for a Lawrence Butler? Because, I don't know, I guess the way you described James Wood, I could see Lawrence Butler fitting that mold kind of.
Yeah, the price has gone up a lot on Butler. So I haven't actually had the chance to pay this current price. I plan on getting Butler in some of my auctions. Like with Butler and with Langford, I think it's almost easier to get them in auctions than snake drafts, at least for me, because of
sure
the types of players I want to get sort of in that same range. But I'm a Lawrence Butler believer. Like I see a massive ceiling with him as early as this year. And like he showed us what the ceiling was over the final couple months last year. So really the only argument against him is just that it wasn't like a, whatever you want to say is a big enough sample. Like, you know, if you want to just use small sample to say you don't believe it, I think that's really all you can use. You can't look at anything that happened and say, well, like, oh, he was getting really unlucky with this, or like he was dominant and it all checked out under the hood, and he has those raw tools to do that. Like he could be a 35 plus homer guy who steals 20 plus bases and has a high average and high OBP. Like he showed that type of serious high ceiling last year. So I'm definitely more in than out, and it's just kind of a question of how do I make the pieces fit from a, where am I getting my closer? Where am I getting my, you know, starters, that type of thing. But I think he's worth the price right now.
That's good to know. Cause a lot of what you said there is I'm a full believer because I was in on him last year. I saw the improvements and I took the discount on Fab and ran with it. to me, but what you said there is I haven't been able to draft him yet because of where I'm taking people in a snake. So it's been challenging because you can't, like, we always say, yeah, we want this guy, this guy, this guy, but you can't get them all. It's just never going to happen. Whereas in an auction, like you mentioned, you got your type of player and you can get so many and then you can go dollar days or whatever you got to do to make up for these differences. So it's good to hear you say that, like what you're seeing, and there's a ceiling to him. So like he's going at 68 now, a ceiling could be, 45 to 30 or something like that, which is pretty good as well. That's interesting because Butler's been one where, like you said, some people aren't believers or they are believers. Like there's really no middle ground with Lawrence Butler.
Yeah, it's the people that bought him. I think it's like people are going to look smart one way or the other. Because I do think he could, not that the people that are saying to fade him are going to take an L on it if he's great, but like he could easily make those people look stupid for preaching caution there. But then also, he could have like I don't know what like the floor is for him. Like that's the other thing is it's not like it's boom or bust with Lawrence Butler. Like he can just be good. A fine player who hits 245 with 22 homers and 15 steals. The people that drafted him aren't going to love that, but I don't think there's this like option of Lawrence Butler's so bad he gets sent to AAA or anything like that.
Yeah, like the stat line he gave last year and basically a partial season, if he finished the year with that same stat line, you're fine. Like he didn't crush you by any means, but I'm with you. If he leads off a full season, could be entertaining. Could be pretty good. All right, Brenton Doyle. Many are saying this is the next Nolan Jones in Colorado, but I don't know. I think I don't agree with that completely, but I could be wrong. He improved on the swing and miss last year, which in a big, big way. So is that sustainable? We'll see. But power speed, we know he can play good defense. And right now he's got an ADP going around 76. So where are you sitting on Brenton Doyle?
I think he's totally fine where he's going. Probably hits for the lowest average of the guys we've talked about so far. But, he should. We haven't talked about him yet because we're going down by ADP. So I think you're getting the same stats as you're getting with James Wood, just with maybe 10 points fewer batting average.
All right, second pitcher we're going to discuss here is Spencer Schwellenbach, who surprised me last year to do the domination that he did in 123 innings at the big league level. Now you got to hope he can do it again because you have to pay an ADP of 85 as probably your SP2, depending on how aggressive you are in the pitching department. So where do you stand on Spencer Schwellenbach right now?
I'm okay with the price. I think it was a really good story. And he threw a ton of innings last year. So he's fully built up. He's good at generating weak contact. He has a ton of pitches. He throws a ton of strikes. He pitches for a really good team, so he should get wins. So, I don't really see any issues with Schwellenbach. I mean, he's young, but that's about it.
Yeah, and the Braves need pitchers right now. So I guess not like he's technically fighting for a spot. We talked about the other pitchers on your show, and I think he's definitely far and away above them. So yes. Nothing to worry about there. All right, Mark Vientos had a monster 27 home run season while hitting .268. I think the batting average might have surprised many. No one's ever really doubted the power metrics when it comes to Mark Vientos. He's going at ADP 92 right now. There's a chance he moves to first base, so you gain that dual first base, third base, the way things are looking. But where are you sitting on a Mark Vientos? Because it's pretty much just the power-only profile unless you believe in the batting average.
I like him. I think he's an ascending asset. Like I think he is going to keep making gains with the strikeouts and the walks. And I don't think you can really get a 35 homer profile from really any infielders in this range other than sure. Mark Vientos. And I think the batting average, like he's not going to help it, but I think he's going to pay off his ADP if he just does what ATC has him for at 249. It's just really hard to find that type of power there. And I also think he will add first base eligibility during the season. Like the Mets are saying everything you would expect them to say. Oh, wait. No, they just yesterday said he's going to be their first baseman. So Yeah, I'm all about it. Like, I think he could get to 40 homers this year, and it's a really good spot in the lineup for him. So I don't think it was a kind of blip. I think it was more skills growth, the batting average surprising people, than just pure luck. And like, I don't see him regressing to like 225 this year. So just that amount of power outside the first few rounds, it's tough to find.
Very, very tough to find. I agree with you there. He's got that kind of, and I'm not trying to pick on him because it's his teammate, but it's a Pete Alonso like stat line, essentially, if he can get the 240-ish. And you're getting him a lot later than you usually get Pete Alonso. So that's why I love the idea of Mark Fientos. You just got to build your team accordingly as you're doing that. Jordan Westberg was having a really, really strong rookie campaign before an injury derailed that, but over 107 games, we saw 18 homers, 6 stolen bases while hitting .264. He has second base, third base, so that MICI, which is always nice. Eligibility, ADP is around 93 for Westberg, and he looks like he's cemented back into the lineup, even though there are other options in Baltimore. It's his job to lose, essentially. So are we back in on Jordan Westberg at that price?
Oh, yeah. We're going back to the Jordan Westberg well this year. He was a lot of fun to have last year, and the position eligibility is great, the corner middle. And he's just a great standard roto piece. He's going to hit for a pretty high average, even if the OBP isn't amazing, and just put a bunch of balls in play. The walls coming in Baltimore should help Westberg in the power department, although I think he was destined to tap into even more power this year anyway. So love Westberg. People know about him. I mean, he's not cheap, but he's just a really useful piece to have, especially with the eligibility.
I like hearing you already believe there was more power there, because I think that's always the question I have looking at him, is how much power does Westberg have? So the fact that he can get into a little bit of more power is very, very nice to hear, because that ups that profile a lot to me, because otherwise it was kind of just a good batting average, run score, steal some bags. You throw some more pop out there, that's pretty, pretty nice. All right, Tristan Casas. This is one that looks like I haven't heard a trade rumor in like a month. So that is a plus in his world, unless I missed something. So that's big. But we know he has immense power, missed a lot of time due to injury last year. ADP is 125. He goes around like the Vinny P's of the world and some other first basemen. Where are you at on Tristan? Because he's a very, very polarizing player in fantasy right now.
Yeah, I'm just so scared of a trade still. And specifically a trade to the Mariners would really suck. So I've maybe been just passing on value in my last couple drafts with Casas. Because I think if you're getting him right now and he doesn't get moved, I think it's going to be a really good return on investment. But I just look at that roster, and it's like they're not going to be able to get someone to take Yoshida without taking a ton of the money off of that deal. So like Casas seems like the obvious piece to move if you're trying to clear a spot. So that's my only drawback there. But first base is just a wasteland, and he's got upside, and I think he's got floor. Like, do you view Casas as like a significant injury risk? I guess he's like he's maybe slightly elevated because he's just so big and he's missed time, but like I think he's pretty safe if he stays with the Red Sox.
Yeah, I don't consider it the injury risk part. What you started out the whole description of Casas is where I've been the entire offseason. I have zero shares because I have no idea what to expect from him, where he's playing, just because there's so many rumors of it. Felt like they didn't want him on the team. Like, we don't want you here for a while there. And that's nothing. That's not what you want to be targeting, as we already do enough dumb drafting to begin with early. Like that there's going to be so much turnover. If I'm hearing a team say something, I'm like, okay, well, let's just turn that off. And again, this could be me doing something on the other side of the dumb spectrum. I should just take advantage of that. And I'm with you, because like I haven't drafted them, and I look at it because first base does get rough, real rough. And it's usually after like this little tier, it gets really, really bleak in your draft room. So it's a tough one. Yeah. I got nothing there. I'm not worried about the injuries with him. It's more of, is he in Boston? And if he is, I think you're right. This could be a potentially really good pick at 125. That's round 10 in a 12 teamer. That's like what, round 8 or so in a 15. Mm-hmm. That's pretty darn nice if he does stick around there. It's just, I think as we get closer to spring training, I might be more interested in taking that pick type situation.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what the if the, how much the price moves up like the closer we get.
Good point.
But then it would be hilarious if he got dealt like midway through spring training. But
that would be just par for the course, everybody. That would be it for sure. But I'm with you. Like his price tag, I have a feeling we're not the only ones thinking like, where's he going to play? Where's he going to play? Because everyone drafting really early are usually pretty sharp guys that have their fingers on most of the pulses. All right, Pete Crow Armstrong. Fun player to discuss here because 10 homers, 27 steals last year, .237. Up, down, got yo-yoed for a bit, but finished the year looking much better at the plate, I'd say. Much more, like, the quality of contact looked a lot better. ADPs of 133, this seems like one of the, at least for me, one of the bigger differences in potential that depends on who you talk to with PCA. So what are your thoughts on PCA? Because I could see taking the gamble for the upside he brings. I just don't know how far the downside is with him.
Yeah, I'm not drafting him there. I look at the batting average and the power. Like, to me, speed is something you can get throughout the draft. There are speed options late. There are speed options in the middle. It's not a category that I'm just really going out of my way to load up on. And especially when it comes with a guy that's going to hit probably below 250, probably fewer than 20 homers. That's just once you start getting into that low of an average and that little power, you'll find guys all over the draft that are going to steal 15, 20, 25 bases. So I can't use a pick that early on a guy that I think is going to hit below 250 with less than 20 homers.
Yep, that's been my biggest deterrent. He feels more like a rabbit to me, and I'm not a rabbit guy, especially at that ADP. Now, maybe he proves me wrong. Maybe he goes and figures it out. I just don't see it in his profile, but – and again, super young. That's what's fun about these guys. All right, Jared Jones. We'll go back to the mound here for a minute. ADP of 139. When he first jumped onto the scene last year, he was electric. Everything was great. He had injuries and a couple of hiccups and was serviceable towards the end. It's one of those, like, he got his innings, got to the 121, like I mentioned. You throw AAA in there, got to 133, basically. So you could see an easy jump to 160 to 170. That's very feasible. How are we feeling on Jared Jones? Because I'm going to keep my thoughts to myself here to see what you had to say first.
Yeah, he's, you know, maybe of all the guys we're going to talk about today, he's the guy that I'm kind of I'm still sort of on the fence on for 2025. I was all about Jared Jones last year. That was one of my better calls last year. But at the same time, part of what I loved about him was the price. And I knew the risk was high of injury then because of his age, his stature, how hard he throws. The injury risk to me is only elevated now after him coming down with the injury last year. So it's just – I see, like, Jared Jones, I think, could be a top 10 pitcher in baseball. And I see, you know, a chance that he, a greater chance that he gets, like, Tommy John surgery early in the season or in spring training than with most of the pitchers that are getting considered in this range. So I'm really torn on it. I love the pitcher. I think that if we just get 165 healthy innings of Jared Jones, he's just going to put up ridiculous numbers. But I do see, like, I see some elevated injury risk there just because of all the factors I mentioned.
Okay. So yeah, you're on a little bit of a different spectrum than me. Cause I was all out on him at the start of draft season. And as we go on, I look at different pitchers and I'm trying to think of potential, like, upside plays. Like you said, if he throws 165, it's nuts. So I've been starting to go, okay, as my SP3 that has maybe definitely SP2, if not a potential, like, backside SP1 potential in that arm, I've been slowly taking him here. I haven't forced the picks on Jared Jones, but I've actually started drafting him once in a while.
Yeah, I support that approach. And I think I want, like, where I'm kind of leaning is I want him on maybe like one of my big money teams.
There you go.
maybe one of my DCs, maybe not my like CLQ DC, but yeah. I want a little bit of exposure.
Yeah, like to me, like in a 12-team OC where you're looking for a ceiling play, like Jared Jones feels like that guy. Like
Jared Jones is a great online championship pick. Yes.
Yeah, because like because if he gets hurt, like TJ, just drop him. Who cares? Is what it is. So that's where I've been kind of focusing my attention because I play more 12s than 15s, and I'm starting to turn my brain onto Fab more than just doing mm-hmm. DCs at this point in time, and that's where he's starting to be a little more appealing to me right now. All right, Dylan Cruz, you mentioned him earlier. The hype train was real on him last year. Got a cup of coffee, 218 average in 31 games, but he showed glimpses of something good. And we know the minor league numbers are pretty solid. ADP 138 right now, so you're not paying technically a premium if you believe in him. So what are your thoughts on Cruz? Is he another kind of PCA, or do we have higher expectations here?
Yeah, so I've been Langford over Cruz since the draft, and that's worked out pretty well. And I think I've been lower on Cruz as a pure hitter than most people every step of the way. And I think that's worked out pretty well. But I also am on board with him as a top 150 pick because of that national situation that I alluded to earlier. Like, they're just going to let Cruz could steal 40 bases this year based on the way they're going to use him, where he's going to hit in the lineup. Like OBP is really like, if we're talking like batting average, OBP, home run power, I think OBP is the one spot where Cruz is pretty good. Like, I think he's someone you can hit first or second in a big league lineup. And then with just the permanent green light he's going to have on first base, that's where I see the appeal with Cruz, the runs. Like, he could push for 100 runs. He could push for 30 to 40 steals. But I don't think it's going to be that great in terms of power or batting average. And, you know, the projection systems don't. And you don't necessarily have to pay for that as long as you're kind of forecasting 35 steal speed. That justifies the pick. But I do think he'll hit for a higher average than PCA. And I think he'll get more runs, more RBI than PCA.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there as well. Like, I'm leaning more, especially for the ADP gap. You get about 30 pick gap there as well, which is pretty nice. And the Cubs offense is good, but I'm very, very optimistic on what the Nationals are putting together, at least in the top half of that lineup. All right, Mason Winn, shortstop, St. Louis Cardinals, 15 homers, 11 steals, 267 average last year. Looks to be the leadoff man this year, which could boost some of those counting stats. ADP of 161. You know, he's doing the whole I'm working out to get better speed conversation that came out recently. Take that for whatever grain of salt you wish. Where do you stand on Mason Winn? Because it feels like after this pocket, it's like Winn, Pena, Swanson, massive drop off at shortstop ADP once again.
Yeah, I'm kind of annoyed at Mason for saying, I think he said he wants to steal 30 to 40 bases.
Yep.
I did not appreciate him saying that because I sort of thought that he might do that anyway. It just kind of seemed natural, like just given his pure speed, given what he did in the minors, given that the Cardinals are kind of going with this youth movement. It just seemed like a natural progression in his game to become more of a threat on the bases. And I also think it's just going to be a natural progression for him at the plate, tapping into a bit more power every year over the next few years. So I just absolutely love Winn this year. Think he's going to hit for a higher average than those guys you mentioned, like Swanson, Pena. Power, I think, at worst, it's going to be about the same, and I think there's growth potential there, and I think he could steal the 30 bases with a bunch of runs. So, big fan of Winn, and the big part of it for me is just the batting average combo with the playing time and the power speed sprinkled in.
Yep, it's great to hear you say that because I've been pounding that drum, and to hear like a more of a prospect guy mention it, Matt Thompson got me onto him a couple years ago on one of my Cardinals preview show, and said a lot of the same things you said. Is it's like, okay, he's going to come up early, do his thing, but each year, like, he is eventually going to have more power than people give him credit. Like, it's going to grow type thing. My comp I've been making this year, and ADP is a little different than last year, but I'm like, he's this year's Zach Neto to me. Like, we're going to get a 2020 Mason Wynn with a good average. And I know you like Neto as well, at least before the injury really sent things back. But yeah, and leading off could just give more runs. Like, I think there's so much to like with Mason Wynn. So to hear you say that, that is just good and bad at the same time. Colton Cowser, a guy that looked like he had the rookie of the year locked up at one point, and then kind of went in a slump, still finished with 24 homers, 9 steals, 242 average. ADP is close to 170 right now. He's a guy that I like. I don't see anything wrong with him, but it seems like in drafts, I just somehow just go right past him most of the time at that point of the draft. Where are you sitting on a guy like Colton Cowser?
Yeah, I'm kind of the same as you. I loved the breakout last year, got to take advantage of that. But, you know, I think there's a bit of a risk that he, like, if he's ever scuffling at all, like, he could be sitting against lefties. And they've just, you know, they've got, like, Heston Kjerstad sitting right there. I don't think it's likely that this would happen, but, like, I guess, you know, it's possible that just given how much Cowser strikes out, like, he could get cold enough where he's actually losing time to Kjerstad against righties. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's just, like, looking for ways that this could go bad. I don't think we can just assume Colton Cowser gets 575 plate appearances. And then there's another guy or two that we might talk about coming up where I just see the price on Cowser, and I look at some other outfielders that also come with maybe a little bit of platoon risk and aren't going to hit for a super high average. And I see guys I think are similar later. So I like the player, and I don't think it's necessarily a bad pick, but I see ways that it could go wrong.
If the player you're talking about also wears orange and black and resides on a team I enjoy, then yes, I'm with you on that as well. Yeah. Shane Baz, or Baz, I always screw that up. I apologize. This one I have not been able to draft. Like, I know how good he, and I should be more interested because he started out there kind of, you know, babying him, getting his innings back up for good reasons. By the end, he was looking really, really solid, getting closer to 5 innings to start, but it's still the Rays. So I don't know if they let him really get going anytime soon, coming off TJ and whatnot. And you got to still pay a price of 178. So it's not a premium, but I want more, I don't know, certainty at that time still. So I haven't done it yet, but I know the talent's very good. So where do you sit on Shane Baz?
Yeah, he's kind of in that Jared Jones grouping where I wouldn't mind having, you know, one share on an important team, but I don't think I would want to have a ton. I love Shane Baz pre-injury. I didn't see quite that pitcher when he came back. He's definitely someone to watch in spring training. Like, you know, how dominant does he look? Because there were times last year where he didn't look that dominant. And before the injury, he absolutely was. Like, he was just that young, just shut everyone down, fireballer. So I don't really have any of him yet, but there is a chance that he's just a really impactful, like, SP2 caliber guy this year.
I share those sentiments. I just can't do it at all. Michael Toglia had a nice year in the power department with 25 home runs, even stole 10 bags, but hit 218, and batting average has been a conundrum for Toglia as he's been going through the majors here. A lot of people like him, though, for that power upside he brings, and maybe he develops into a 230, 240 type guy. ADP is 185. I have zero shares so far. Where do you sit on Michael Toglia?
Yeah, I can't do it. I did not. I mean, there was a time when I liked him as a prospect. It was like 3 or 4 years ago. and then he just kind of came out of nowhere last year. And I don't trust the batting average, even with the Coors. Like, I think you're not going to want to use Toglia away from Coors. Like, you probably have to if you draft him here, but you're going to be looking for ways to bench him whenever they're away from Coors. And I don't want to take a player like that where he's gone.
Yep, totally agree. That's why I've kind of just been out on that one. That's why you get your first baseman earlier if you can. Luis Eel, AL Rookie of the Year, and it's one of those he did so well to get the Rookie of the Year, 3.5 ERA. Walks were still a massive issue, and you think if you get the Rookie of the Year, there's going to be more hype behind him coming into the next year. There really isn't. ADP's 189. You look at projections, they're not like in love with him. It's not bad, but it's not great. There was rumors he might lose his rotation spot because of the depth of the Yankees at one point. I don't think he will, but there are those potentials. So I just want to get your thoughts on Eel real quick, because again, Rookie of the Year going to really not excited in fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, I owe Luis Eel for what he did last year. He saved me on some teams. But man, it sure looks like a career year.
Yeah.
Really didn't even fix the walks issue and still was able to put together that 1.19 whip. I mean, that's going to have to be a career best whip for Eel. Like I don't see him topping that at least anytime soon. And the 151 and two thirds innings, like, I don't know how you can have any faith in him going near that number a second time in a row, just given how hard he throws. And so it's just, he's such an obvious regression candidate. I think that's why the price is where it is after what he did as a 26 year old for the Yankees. I definitely trust the strikeouts on like a per start basis. I just don't trust the command and I don't trust the durability.
Yeah. Just the way they started to utilize him down the stretch, maybe they were monitoring innings. I don't know, but it just felt like they weren't in love with what Eel brought to the situation compared to where they were earlier in the season. His teammate Austin Wells, we saw 13 homers and a 2.29 average, really disappeared come like September. He was one of the bright spots for the Yanks, and then the postseason wasn't great either. ADP's 201 right now. I like him as a catcher too in a lot of my formats. Where do you sit on Austin Wells? Was the kind of first half of his season the guy we should expect, or is it more the second half of the season?
I mean, it's probably in the middle. Boring answer, but I think he's fine for like a C2. Like you said, especially if you kind of spread out where you take your catchers. Mm-hmm. I think the, you know, better, more of like an OBP guy than a batting average guy. He's always going to probably struggle to hit much better than 230. But yeah, the power should be there. Playing time should be there. So I think he's a fine second catcher. I generally get my second catcher before Austin Wells. But yeah, I think he's fine for that.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I've been trying to go like no farther than like a Tyler Stevenson as my catcher too, if I can, but that doesn't always work out, and you have to kind of adjust on the fly, and Wells has been an adjustment in those drafts. All right, the player I was hinting at that when James was talking about Colton Cowser, and I'm hoping this is one of the ones he mentioned, is Elliot Ramos of the San Francisco Giants, who had his coming out party last year with 22 homers, 6 steals, and a 269 average in 121 games. And watching him a lot, like everyone will say I have a bias, but I was very impressed with what he did. Like there was times I wanted him to be like more aggressive at the plate, and then he started walking like crazy at one point. ADP's 211, which to me, I think he brings a pretty good floor with maybe some more upside still at that ADP. James, what are your thoughts on Elliot Ramos?
Yeah, I absolutely love Ramos. He was someone I was referencing earlier. What's the difference in what you're going to get this year from Helio Ramos versus Ian Happ? Like, I think it's
that's a great point.
Basically,
maybe he runs more, maybe, but that's a big maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think there's, if one of those two were to bust out and take it to another level, it would be Ramos.
Yep, 100%.
So I love it. Like, I see floor, I see upside, price is affordable. I love that he bats right-handed, so we just don't have to worry about the platoon issue at all. Yes. So it's great. I love the price on Ramos.
Yeah, and the Giants do have, you know, too many outfielders, and they're not all that good, but they have too many of them. They're not going to bother Ramos unless he really hits the skids. Like, he has to really go bad. They're going to run him out there and probably in a pretty good part of the lineup more often than not. So, yeah, I like this one as well. All right. Bowden Francis of the Toronto Blue Jays doesn't strike out many, had good whips, almost added a couple no-hitters, but it's just such a blah profile for me. His ADP is 230. I can't get there because I don't know what he's offering besides ratios, which, hey, as the draft goes on, that's actually beneficial. But there literally is like no strikeouts at times with Mountain Francis.
Yeah. You know, I think he is someone you kind of just want to have. If you look at your pitching after the first 10 rounds and you see that whip could be an issue, you're not, you know, you run out of starting pitching that's going to help you out of that jam pretty quickly. So like you'd obviously be looking at a guy like Zach Eflin maybe to help with ratios and in the late 100s. But like if you miss on him, yeah, it might get to a point where you look at Bowden Francis for those ratios. But I know there's smart people that like him. I know the fastball is a good pitch, and maybe there is a chance for him to take a little bit of a step forward with the strikeouts this year, but hasn't been a target for me.
Yeah, same here. There are some smart people that do like him, though. That's a good point. So maybe it pans out one way or another. Another giant here, Tyler Fitzgerald, coming off a 15-homer, 17-steal season while hitting .280. ADP's .236. I'll keep my thoughts out of this for now, and I'll let you have the floor. But what are you expecting, or what are your thoughts on Tyler Fitzgerald? Because he is another guy that's – a lot of people have questions on him right now.
Yeah, I'm less optimistic about Fitzgerald than I am Ramos. Just kind of a scary profile to me. Like, you know, kind of came out of nowhere to have that really awesome run in the big leagues. Was awesome at AAA, obviously. But the strikeouts and the walks is scary. The breakout at age 26 is a little scary. Just the combination. I see a lot of downside potential, and like I don't think he's like a made man there or anything where they'll give him a really long leash if he's going through struggles. So not a target.
Yeah, the stolen bases have always been a thing. His speed's been a Fitzgerald thing. I would never count on a .280 average. Well, never say never, but would not count on a .280 average because that swing and miss, like you mentioned, is very severe when it comes to Tyler Fitzgerald. The only plus I'll give is they want to move him to second base after Adames signed. They flat out said that. So they want to play him, which is a plus. Now, again, if he struggles a lot, maybe Luciano gets another run or something. There's angles there. But they'll play him. So it's one of those we've talked with some other players. If he can hit .240, he's a 2020 guy potentially, or at least a 15, like 25 guy or something. So it just kind of depends on your roster build is what I'd say with Fitzgerald. But do not expect what you saw this past year. That's all I keep telling people. Do not expect that at all. All right, Colt Keith, 13 homers, 7 steals, .260 average last year in his first run in the bigs. ADP of .235. Or no, sorry, that was Fitzgerald. Keith's ADP is .252, likely gaining first base eligibility to go with second base as well. Where are we sitting on Colt Keith?
Yeah, I'm somewhat interested. The only real drawbacks I see are just, you know, how much power are you getting? And then do they sit him against lefties? Because they did sit him a lot against lefties last year. They have, they like to use their depth on their bench. And then all the projection systems have him basically for 15 home runs, 16 home runs. That's not what you'd love to be getting out of a guy that's probably not going to steal many bases and is someone you're going to be plugging in at first base. But I think the price is so affordable, and like, there's no way he's not going to at least hold on to the strong side of a platoon. Right. And he's going to be hitting high in the lineup against righties. So I dig it if I've missed out, and it's more of a, if I've missed out on some first base targets type of thing, like I'm probably drafting Colt Keith and then waiting for him to get first base eligibility because of something that went wrong earlier. Like, I'm not going to be scrambling for a second baseman at this point in the draft. But, like if I miss out on Andrew Vaughn, for instance, I might pivot to Colt Keith there.
I like that. And even with the sitting him versus lefties, he still played 148 games last year. So they gave him some chances, at least early on, against them. And they still might because Torque's pretty much in the doghouse, unless that is his platoon partner. So I do like Colt later on. Like, I've looked at him as an MI potential play. I don't mind the first base thing you mentioned. He's going to get run, and I think there's more to him as he develops. So at that price tag, I don't hate it at all. A player I have zero shares of, because I have zero idea of what to do with, is Jackson Holliday. And I know I'm not alone in this. Jackson Holliday has an ADP around 249 right now, and it was just one of the most inconsistent throw your hands up what took place last year with Jackson Holliday in the big league level. So where do you stand on him entering this year? Because it's one of those, if you believe the quote-unquote prospect pedigree, that phrase everyone loves, this is a steal. This is a great pick, but I just don't know what to do with him at all.
Yeah, you know, I think he's there. You kind of have to take a leap of faith almost with Holliday, because his run in the big leagues did sort of tank the projections on him. I think you're seeing him fall in drafts. Like, I know he's gotten even later than that ADP. Vlad Sedler was texting me about him last night, about just how late he was getting him. I think like
he's gone as low as 323 in January.
Yeah. So I think you gotta just be jumping in and grabbing him if he's falling that far. He wasn't going that low when I was drafting. I haven't done a draft in a while, but like, you know, he might sit against lefties. But I see major growth potential. He adjusted his setup towards the end of last year. Like, the Orioles apparently had been trying to get him to go to a toe tap and ditch the leg kick for a while, and they finally got him to do that after he'd been scuffling, and the results were pretty good. So you just got to look at this player for what he is. He's like he was a baby last year. He's still physically maturing, just like, and like, it's crazy. Like, he looks like he is still like 16 or 17. He's going to take a massive leap one of these years in the power department. It could be this year. It might even just be like a small jump this year, and then another jump a year or two from now. But he's really, really just scratching the surface. And I think he's going to do enough to play against righties. He's going to steal bases. And yeah, I think it's just the projection systems have kind of tanked his price. And I think it's low enough where people should be jumping in there and grabbing him, because you can afford to, you know, be a little bit wrong here, and it can still be okay.
If you're looking for an MI at that point, do you go with Holliday or Keith?
I would probably go with, I've got first base filled. I don't need that with Keith. I'm probably going with Holliday then, because I can just grab like a, you know, I'd probably back Holliday up with like a Otto Lopez, like four or five rounds later.
Yeah, that's smart. Yeah, have a plan, but okay. Yeah, that's why I say I have nothing. I don't know what to do with him, because we know how good the talent level is. It was just so bad last year, which maybe we, you know, so young is what I should say. So we shouldn't worry about it as much as where my brain should go. Garrett Mitchell, ADP of 257. This is a guy I like a lot. Assuming like now Roster Resource has him as a starting center fielder. They had him platooning for a while. Like, I've always said, why would you platoon this guy? If he didn't break his hand last year, he probably would have played regularly from Milwaukee. I think there's some nice pop with a ton of speed with Mitchell. There are, you know, still probably some growing pains to be had with him, and thus the 257 ADP. Where do you stand on Garrett Mitchell? Maybe I'm just completely wrong on this one.
No, he's a good example of why I have no interest in Pete Crow Armstrong earlier. Basically the same statistical profile and same strengths and weaknesses. And it wasn't just like durability has been a problem for Mitchell basically since he got drafted. So it wasn't just kind of last year where the playing time was a thing, but he's young enough. Like, I don't think you can just assume he's only going to be a guy that can handle 80, 90 games a season at this age. And the price is so low. Like, they definitely want to play him, like you said.
Yep, with you there. A couple more later round targets. Connor Norby, ADP of 266, went over to Miami in the good old we won't even mention his name, the big trade that took place there with the Orioles. 9 homers, 3 steals, hit .236. So, like, there was signs of, like, he had a run where he was hitting consecutively and they had quite a hit streak going. And then just some scuffles as well. Where were we sitting on a guy like Connor Norby?
I think he's more floor than ceiling. And the floor is largely just due to his situation. Like, he's on such a horrible roster that he couldn't possibly fall too far in the batting order or see his at-bats cut into. So the playing time floor is fantastic. I mean, he should breeze past 600 plate appearances if he stays healthy. But in terms of what he's going to do when he's out there, like, I don't think he's going to move the needle a ton in any one category. It's just kind of a compiler that, you know, hits below 255, probably not going to steal more than 12 bases, probably not going to hit 20 home runs. So you need him to stay healthy, but I think he'll get a ton of playing time.
All right. The last name I have for you is the one and only Kumar Rocker, who looked pretty dominant in walk issues, but looked dominant at the same time in a short sample with the Rangers, threw a little in the minors for them as well. ADP's 292, technically doesn't have a roster spot just yet, but what are we thinking on Kumar Rocker?
If there's a dip to buy, I might buy it. You know, like, I think we talked about him, but like, you look at that rotation, Eovaldi, DeGrom, John Gray, Tyler Mahle, Cody Bradford. Like, are we really terrified that Kumar Rocker can't get in there by opening day? Like, I think a spot's going to open up one way or another. So Rocker could get injured, but yes. Like, I think if he's healthy and effective in spring training, like, there'll be a spot for him.
Yep, I'm with you. Like, we look at that rotation, the first four pitchers you named were 33 years or older with massive injury histories. So it's not the growing optimism there. All right, got one listener question from the YouTube here. Randy Leeson says, where are you guys at on C.J. Abrams and Riley Green? Abrams dealt with a shoulder injury off and on, an assist in his left wrist. Green didn't run last year, and he showed some power and improving strikeouts. Where do you stand on Abrams and Green?
Well, I love Riley Green. You get into that same issue with, like, Green as with, like, Butler and Langford, where I might be more interested in an auction just because – where those guys go, there's really valuable stuff coming off the board at other positions too. But Riley Green, just incredibly safe, really good hitter. I think the batting average could get even better with him. So don't really have any questions with Riley Green. Abrams, like, oh man, I don't know what the batting average, like, he's hit .245 basically every year. Yeah. And you got to take him pretty high. That's the only drawback. I'm not really worried about any kind of knucklehead stuff. I mean, you got to consider it, but it's just really about using a high pick on a guy that might hit below .250 for a fourth straight year. That's my only holdup with Abrams.
Yeah, and that's fair, because you've said it a long time ago on a different show that about the batting average, and it's like, yeah, these guys all have good batting average, but the way it drops off, so on and so forth. Like, you want those, and Abrams at the where you're picking them, you drop off. And I'm a big Abrams fan. Like, I don't mind taking the chance on Abrams. Team dependence, obviously, how you build things. Because I think there is a year where we see 20 to 25 homers and, like, 40 steals. Like, we're going to get – like, what we saw from Jazz Chisholm last year, Abrams can do, I think. So, yeah. if you can build around that, I think he's worth every bit of his price tag. But like you said, is you don't ever see him being that elite batting average guy to kind of offset that situation. That's the conundrum there. So, I'm with you. All right, James, appreciate it as always. Before we head out, remind everybody where they can find you and what you got going on.
All the baseball stuff is hitting RotoWire these days, so re-up your subscription if you haven't already. I would strongly appreciate that, and if you haven't subscribed before, check us out. Lots of great off-season content, obviously, like I talked about earlier in the show, but, like, very, very valuable in-season stuff, too, that you're going to need to win your leagues. Projected starters grid, daily lineups, injury news, all that stuff. So definitely give us a try.
Yeah, the weekly starters grid or is basically a must. I use that during the season. I have that page basically up at all times on one of my sheets. It's just a go to at all times. All right, appreciate it, my friend. Always great talking to you, everybody. This was Benched with Bubba, episode 722 with the one, the only James Anderson. Catch you all next time.